Previously on the Ron Van Dam Show.
You're going to meet the person of your dreams today. I'm very sex-driven, so don't be, like, you know, shocked or anything like that. I don't want to deal with that crap.
And now, today's episode.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Unbelievable.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I am slowly but surely falling apart. I am. This has been a weird few days for me. I am falling apart. My engine is running, but my car doors are falling off. I don't know what happened yesterday, but at some point I burnt my tongue or something like that. The back of my tongue is weird, so I'm having trouble pronouncing words. Well, that's great if you have a job sewing in a factory. But my job is to do this freaking talk show every day. And here I am, and I cannot feel the back of my tongue. So it's almost like I've got a lisp going on the left side of my tongue. I have no idea why. I didn't have a grilled cheese sandwich or anything yesterday. I must have burnt it somehow. So there's that. Then, for some reason, my allergies have kicked up. For no reason whatsoever, there are various factions inside my body that say to themselves, let's give Ron a hard time today, and just, let's get that stuff flowing out of his nose. Come on, everybody, let's let the dripping begin. So between my allergies, my burnt tongue, and my pharmaceutical mind, I don't know. But enough about my problems. What about yours? You know, every once in a while I find comfort in other people's problems. I do. As bad as I think things are for me sometimes, all I have to do is talk to other human beings that surround me, and if you talk to them enough, they will tell you their problems. And they are incredibly deep and horrible. So it makes me feel good. I mean, I feel for my friends and the people that I know when they go through hard times. But on the other hand, it's not me, so that's good. See, that's why you have friends. It's not to support you. It's to, in comparison, make you feel better about yourself. Here we are, you and me, just the two of us, in this quiet little cave, in which our problems resound off the walls. Hey, what are you going to do? Oh my God, this nose thing, I apologize for that. I was watching the weather a few days ago. It was one of the most incredible epiphanies I've ever had. I was watching the TV. And this weather guy is a guy standing up in front of a map, and he's saying, this is funny, it's just funny to me. He says, it's going to rain very heavily tomorrow. Expect wet roads. Well, thank you, Sherlock. So you're telling me it's going to rain tomorrow, and I should expect the roads to get wet. Thanks for pointing that out. I didn't realize that was a possibility. Frequently, when it rains, I always assume that the roads are going to be bone dry and not affected by any wetness whatsoever, but You're telling me that when it rains outside, things get wet. Wow, thank you for having that job and telling me about things. Watch out, Ron. I know you're a moron, but the roads are going to get wet if it rains. Ooh, so be careful. The roads could get wet. Ooh, wow. That's like taking a shower. Be careful, Ron. You better take all your clothes off, because if you walk in the shower with your clothes on, your clothes could get quite wet. I didn't know that. Thank you. Yeah. You know what that stems from? Being a kid. Yeah, when you went to kindergarten, that's what they taught you this stuff. It's raining outside. Better wear a raincoat. Oh, thank you. Thank you for telling me. It's snowing outside. Better get your mittens. Oh, my God. By the way, the only time you ever have mittens is when you're skiing or when you're a child. Actually, not even skiing. When you're a child and you want to cover your hands, you wear mittens. Mittens. Mittens are gloves, only I don't think they have any fingers. I think somebody cheaped out. They said, hey, let's create a pair of gloves where there's just the thumb. And everything else, just what the hell, just put them all in one compartment. It'll be cheaper that way. The people in Korea can make more gloves that way. So let's just do that. And they're just kids, so screw it, you know. The kids, they know what kids are going to complain. They're kids. They're not going to complain that they're putting the rest of their four fingers in one large compartment. They don't care. The parents don't understand. So let's do that. So as a kid, you wear mittens. And as embarrassing enough as mittens are to a child, they further embarrass you by attaching them to the sleeve of the coat with a metal clip and a piece of elastic. So you never lose your mittens. Johnny, where are your mittens? I can't find... Oh, look, they're hanging from my sleeve. That was fairly ingenious, because kids notoriously are scatterbrains. Their brains have not developed yet, although I know many adults who are in the same boat. Their brains just have not developed, and I'm fearing probably never will. But as a child, you expect them not to know anything. They've had no life experiences. So they were the mittens. Then you get older and it's gloves. I mean, now you're old enough to figure out that there are compartments for each individual finger. So we're going to let you wear gloves now. Mittens. But that's what they told you when you were a kid. You know, it's snowing outside. Wear your mittens. It's raining outside. Wear a raincoat. It's cold outside. Wear a heavy coat. Stop telling me what to wear, okay? I mean, you know, some of those weather people got a little over-sexualized, you know. It's ladies, it's very warm outside today. Make sure you wear your bikinis into the street so we can all look at you. It's going to be warm today, ladies with good bodies. Remember, go to the nude beach. Don't wear any clothing. And to all the ladies out there, it's going to be a nice day outside. Wear that tight little thong. What is it with thongs, ladies? What are you doing? Why are you wearing that? Why do you want a piece of material shoved up your butt? Do you find this comfortable? When I went to school, they used to wear our little jock straps in our underwear, and the bad boys like Trump would come walking around pulling your underwear up, and that would like go right up your crack, your butt crack, and it would hurt. Women do it on a purpose. I don't understand. I don't understand you, ladies. I don't understand why you torture yourselves. For men? Seriously? Do you think they care? I don't think they do. They don't care. You don't have to wear that material up your butt crack to attract anybody. I don't know why you do that. You don't have to wear high heels and constantly have your toes pointed to the ground and the heel of your foot like 20 inches in the sky. I mean, I don't know how that could possibly be comfortable, shoving your feet into a small can and then standing on your tiptoes. I don't know why you do that. You think it looks better? You think your posture looks better? You think you're more attractive? Men don't care. They don't. I mean, don't walk around wearing sweatpants all the time. That's kind of ridiculous, but you don't have to shove your feet into those little tubes, and you don't have to put material up your butt crack. I mean, it's just not necessary. I don't know why you do that. And what's with the bras, man? Now, I don't have those things in the front. I do, but they're not that big. But you don't have to wear that if you don't want to. No one's forcing you. And what, you're afraid they're going to sag? Why? They're not going anywhere. I don't care. Who cares anymore? Who cares? People don't care anymore. They might care for a couple of years, but after that, they don't care anymore. After you're 30 years old, park the car. It doesn't matter anymore. Nobody cares. Men don't care. You don't care. Women don't care. Nobody cares after 30. There's a realization after 30 years old. All right, who cares now? I'm sick and tired of making other people like me because of the way I look or because I wear a bra properly or I got a material. I don't care anymore. Nobody cares. I don't care. Yeah, when you're after 30, you realize it doesn't matter. And people are going to do it or they're not. It's just like, stop trying to attract things with shiny objects. It just doesn't work anymore. Who cares? Then you turn 40, you care even less. Then you turn 50 and you really start caring again. Uh-oh, I'm getting older. My face is starting to change. My skin's starting to do strange things. Starting to get little marks all over my body here. What the hell's going on? And then both men and women scramble to look as young as they can as quickly as possible. Oh my God, I'm turning 50. I got to make myself attractive like I was when I was 20. Well, why didn't you care? Because now I'm turning 50 and my skin's changing. I'm getting lines and things in my forehead. What's up with that? Why are there lines in my forehead? I look like I'm constantly in wonder. How did that happen? My hair is starting to turn colors. I have gray hairs now. My hair has stopped being a color. My hair gave up. It's not falling out so fast, but it's turning colors on me. My hair is saying, I don't care anymore about the color here. Pigments finished. We're going to strip you of all your color. And you start going crazy. And then the hair does begin to fall out, and your hair gives up. It's like, not only am I going to be changing colors and not being a color anymore, I'm going to start like just leaving. I'm just dropping out of your head. You'll find me in your brush or your comb, but I mean, this ain't worth hanging on for anyway. We're gonna have some dead follicles here. Let's do it. And then your hair starts saying, I'm going to lose all the hair on the top of their heads, or at least thin them real good, but I'm going to freak them out. I'm going to start growing in their ears and in their nose to the point where they have to shave their nose every day. I'm going to fuck them up. And they do. The hair plays some kind of weird trick on you. The hair starts growing where you don't want it and stops growing where you do want it. And from the age of 50 on up, we scramble to be young again. Then when you hit 70, you say to yourself, all right, there's no point anymore. I'm tired of scrambling to look good. I'm at peace with this. I am who I am. Isn't it odd that it took 70 years for me to realize I am who I am, and that's who I am? It took me 70 years to figure this out. Wow, what a waste of time that was. Speaking of hair, thank you, I was speaking of hair. Why do we bother cutting it? You know, if you're real religious and you think that God has a purpose and things happen for a reason, if your hair grows and you're lucky enough to have hair that grows, why would you ever cut it? What are you doing? Whose rule book are you living under where you've got to cut your hair to look a certain way? You think you look good? If your hair grows, let it grow. That's your God-given look. Men and women should have hair down past their shoulders. You shouldn't be cutting that. Who are you to do that? Keep in the back of your mind, someday that hair isn't going to be growing anymore. You're going to look back to the day where you had all that hair and you were cutting it out. That wasn't right. Why do men not have beards? I have a beard and a mustache because that's my God-given hair. I'm not going to screw with that. I don't want to, go to the pearly gates someday, you know, to heaven or hell or something, and they say, Ron, we gave you hair, you chose to cut it off, you're going to hell. That was not right, Ron. So I never cut my hair. My hair is long, and I have a beard. I have a lot of hair where the hair has decided to take care of place in. There are places on my body where the hair has said, I've had enough of this. I don't really care to be on the top of your head anymore. You can wear a hat if you want, but you ain't going to be covered by hair anymore. But I will make up for it. The only place I cut my hair at all is out of my ears and in my nose. I do have to cut those things because I find it very difficult to hear if I don't cut the hair out of my ears, and I find it very difficult to eat when I don't cut the hair coming out of my nose. I don't know where else hair is coming out of, but I don't pay much attention to it, to be honest with you. Anything that's covered by clothes is not a factor anymore. That's why they make clothes. Is it to keep you warm? No. It's to cover up the crap that's coming out of your body. This is... You ever notice people who wear long pants during the summer months? It's because they don't want their legs to show. It's not that they don't want their legs to show. It's that they really shouldn't let their legs show. The summer's a problem for me. It really is. You're not supposed to wear a lot of clothes, and I'm exposing some stuff that I don't want exposed. I mean, you know what I'm saying? People look good covered up. They really do. They really do. It covers all the imperfections. My gosh. Are you still here? Listen to me spout off about stuff you don't care about. Yeah, I know. Well, look, this show doesn't pay for itself. You certainly don't pay for it. We know that. So we do have commercials, and it's important every once in a while, too. Do you like beer?
When you reach for a beer, what are you looking for? The finest malts, grains, and hops? An artisan ale that represents a modern take on traditional brewing techniques that master brewers have refined and treasured for years? A true beer drinking experience? Or, like most of us, are you just looking to get fucked up on the cheap? Well, if you're like the rest of us, congratulations, your beer is here. It's Falkenhalter. It's not a great beer. It's not even a good beer. It's a beer that's $4 a case, and it's strong enough to melt the chrome off a trailer hitch. So kiss your liver goodbye and say hello to Falkenhalter. It's beer.
Yeah, it is. It is beer. I don't like beer. I don't really drink beer. Beer to me is like popcorn. Okay, Ron, you better explain that one. Beer is like popcorn. To me, it's an occasional kind of thing. It's a seasonal kind of thing. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's a seasonal thing. When you're in the movies, you eat popcorn. Otherwise, you kind of don't. When you're in the circus, you go to the circus, you eat cotton candy or popcorn. Otherwise, you just don't. For me, beer is only good at a barbecue with a hot dog or a hamburger. Other than that, don't really think about beer all that often. I really don't. Beer gives me gas. That's the last thing I need. And the last thing you need is for me to have gas. That's you don't need me to have gas, I think, is really more important than me not needing that. You know what I mean? All right, our guest is here today. Let's talk to our guest. Author Robert Levinson joins us now. It's The Leper Messiah is the name of his book, which has won some acclimates. Congratulations, first of all.
Well, thank you very much, Ron. It's a pleasure to be here, but I do appreciate that introduction as well.
Yeah. Now, The Leper Messiah, what inspired you to write this?
Well, you know, it's a book that is a long time in coming. I actually lived on a kibbutz for about 9 months and worked with the kibbutzniks and not the volunteers, and harvested cotton, if you can believe that, before the rains came, and was out in the fields and was looking at this mountain and wondered why it was there. And of course, that's where the famed line from 2 Samuel, "How are the mighty fallen," comes from. And that was David lamenting about Saul, the first king of Israel, and his death. So I became fascinated with David, and then Richard Gere came along, strangely enough, and I was on the set of his 1985 film called David, and I was an extra sitting by the Sea of Galilee, looking like an old ancient Hebrew, and so I had a lot in common, I think, with David. I liked his spirit of adventure, and I just sort of focused in on him. And I thought I'd like to find out and discover more about who this icon of Western civilization was. You know, Ron, I didn't really want to know about the David and Goliath story, because we all know that. I really wanted to dig deeper. And so I went on a bit of a archaeological dig. I wanted to find out about David's home life when he was a child. I wanted to discover who the young man was, the desperate outlaw, and discover things that perhaps not a lot of people know about. So that was the purpose, and it's taken me, it sustained me, because he's quite a character. And I also figured if Da Vinci and Rodin could make much of him, then maybe I should take a shot as well.
Wow. It's almost like a mystery, like you had to do so much research and get your fingernails dirty in order to get every piece of relevant information you could about something that happened a long time ago.
Well, that's, you know, and that is, you're very right, Ron, and I think the important thing here is that your listeners can go on an archaeological dig without getting dirt underneath their nails, as you so quite aptly said. Discovering who this individual is as a young child, as a man, a young boy. This was, for me, just uncovering interesting tidbits and trying to put it together in one thread. I look at the book as a really great adventure story. It's not religious. It's more about a young boy's coming of age. And that's what I was trying to portray, his sense of adventure. But and all the troubles that a young boy can get into.
Well, as it still is the case. But see, it seems to me that back then in history, and we're talking about King David, is that not only are we looking at one individual, we're looking at their immediate family, and each member of the immediate family was as large as the person you're investigating here.
Well, that's quite true. You know, Jesse, his father, was an important elder statesman of the town Bethlehem, because that's where David was born. And you have to put it into context. David was born 1,000 years before Jesus was born as well. So we're talking about the cusp of the Second Iron Age, and about 1010 BCE, before the Common Era. So back to his family, he had a slew of brothers. I still don't know how many there are. I mean, it some say six, some say eight, and different individual papers. One of the most striking things I found out about his family is his mother.
Yes.
Her name is Nitzavet, and she saw me through a lot of difficult times, actually, in writing the book. She was not even mentioned in the Old Testament, not once. She is mentioned a few times in the Midrash, the story surrounding the Old Testament, but I found that it was shameful that she wasn't mentioned at all in the Old Testament, and I do talk about that as well.
Yeah, but why was she, what role did she play in David's life? Why was she so intricate?
Well, I mean, at least for me, in my book, she is a visionary and also a great protector of David. Mm-hmm. I like to highlight her name, raise her name up, and give her, I think, well-deserved and long and coming accolades for what she did, because I think that sometimes behind every young boy who becomes king, there's got to be a very powerful female presence, and that was David's mother. Yeah. And in my book, The Leper Messiah, I do draw that out, and I make sure that we understand that she's a protector, a visionary, and she perhaps can see how far David can go even before he has that ability to see it himself.
Right. I mean, I don't think we have time to get into this, but your life in itself has been quite interesting. You could even write an autobiography, and it would still be captivating. Just very quickly, you got involved with the running of the bulls, I understand?
Well, yes, I was, and it probably hung over from the night before.
Yeah, I would think.
I had traveled all the way across Europe to get to Pamplona, Spain, and ran with the bulls. And it was quite an experience, something I wanted to do. So
why?
I lived a life as well. Yeah. I have an adventurous roaming spirit as well, I guess, just like David does.
Yes, I can see the connection now. This might be your alter ego. I don't even know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
He's an iconic figure, and I'm just little old me. So
who runs from bulls, I guess. Okay. Now, The Leper Messiah, interesting title, and I think it's worth pointing out, I don't know if you agree with me or not, that the Messiah is not an individual, it's concept. Am I right?
Yes. Now, there are a few reasons why I use that title. There's in pop culture, we have David Bowie in his 1972 song, Ziggy Stardust, talking briefly about he came on like a leper Messiah. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's Metallica's song, which is called The Leper Messiah. But you know me, Ron, I like to dig a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Babylonian Talmud and found out that there was actually a strange case called the Leper Messiah. And rabbinical scholars believe that when the world or generation is ready for the Messiah, there's an old man in the house in Israel, and he actually will, you know, just peek his head out of the house, out of the doorway, see if the generation is ready. And if they are, the Messiah comes in the form of a leper. And that, I was captivated by that, of course. Mm-hmm. And so I brought that into the fore. I wanted to use that to captivate, of course, the readers, to have the phrase or title of the Leper Messiah resonate with people. And so that's why I use it, because I think it's fraught with resonance, and I think it's also a captivating title.
Yeah, it is, and it's a captivating book. It's called The Leper Messiah. Yeah, it really is, by RML, better known as Robert Levinson. And okay, so it's available everywhere, I assume.
That's correct. It's available on Amazon, and from there on, you can have many different social media sites you can buy it on. And of course, my email, my website is rmlwriter.com, and there you can find the book trailer and a few other tidbits about myself and David as well.
Okay, that's rmlwriter.com?
That's correct, Ron. Yes.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, you're not just like a guy who makes donuts in a bakery. I mean, you got quite a deal going yourself there. Are you working on something else right now?
Well, yeah, there is a follow-up to The Leper Messiah. Mm-hmm. It's called The Bethlehem Scrolls. The Leper Messiah takes place in the East, and of course, the next book takes place in the West, and then there's going to be a coronation and a marriage, and David's tradition lives on in the West through the second book called The Bethlehem Scrolls.
Fascinating stuff. The Leper Messiah, pick it up. It's throws you into a different world, a different time, and I started reading it. It was like a murder mystery to me, although there's no murder involved, but it's a mystery. It's like, how did this all roll together at a time when there was no history? The things were archived simply by people's recollection of things, really. And it's quite fascinating in that sense. Thank you for your time today.
You're welcome, Ryan. It's been a pleasure, and thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. In the scheme of things, I think we've both been quite tolerable today. And all you can expect from somebody in a relationship is someone to tolerate you. I think that's really what love is. Do you love me? Well, I tolerate you. Good enough. Good enough. Good enough. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace.